This program is a production of the Reformed Forum, an organization devoted to producing and distributing Reformed theological content for a connected age. Online at reformedforum.org. This is Christ the Center, episode number 258. Today we speak with David Brack about ministerial fellowship. Hi, welcome to Christ the Center. My name is Camden Busey. We have another great discussion lined up for you today. I'm delighted to continue to record here on the campus of Westminster Theological Seminary. Been here for a few days and been getting a lot of great material and content, and we're sitting down here with Jonathan Brack, who is Director of Admissions at Westminster Theological Seminary, and we're also very pleased to welcome to the program for the first time his father, the distinguished Reverend David Brack, who is pastor of Christ Covenant OPC in Amarillo, Texas, and he also serves as a board member for Westminster Theological Seminary. Welcome back, Jonathan, and welcome to the program, David. Thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here, Camden.
Hey.
Well, today we were really excited to speak about some really encouraging things. Amarillo, Texas, for people that are familiar with Westminster, has become a place that the Lord has really blessed and a place that the Lord has really used to further the cause of Reformed theology. And there are decades of fun stories and interesting developments of people that the Lord has raised up in Amarillo and eventually brought to Westminster here in Philadelphia. And we can get into that, but we're going to also focus on a Reformed fellowship and a group of ministers that get together to discuss the gospel and to discuss the deeper things of the Lord and to encourage each other in the faith. So that's what we are delighted to speak about today. Jonathan, I want to let you start off and set the table maybe for this Amarillo Reformed Fellowship, ARF, ARF.
ARF, yes. There's a interesting thing that happens in Amarillo, and I'll ask my father to speak more into it, but it's a ministerial alliance called ARF, Amarillo Reformed Fellowship. And it wasn't there when I grew up in Amarillo, but it's something that has blossomed later. And it's been really helpful for a fellowship of the Reformed faith in Amarillo and to getting guys there for, they have a conference every year now. So it's something that also helps send students to Westminster. So my job is it benefits a lot from ARF. Pop, I can't call him David. So tell us about, Tipton calls him Sermonator. Tell us about the beginning of ARF and how it came about, who started it, how it started, who was a part of it.
Well, probably about 7 or 8 years ago, we had a young man who joined our church staff in Amarillo, Andrew Moody. And when Andrew got to town, one of the first things he wanted to do was see if there were other ministers in town of same theological persuasion that he was interested primarily in, see if there are other Calvinists or folks who consider themselves Reformed in churches in Amarillo. And so Andrew kind of got to looking and found some other men in town, and over the course of about 6 months or so, we individually met these other pastors in town. There were a couple of guys from independent Baptist churches. There was one minister from a evangelical free church, one pastor from a Reformed Episcopal church, and then there was Andrew and I, and so anyhow, we met these guys and said, hey, would you be interested in and just meeting on a regular basis as pastors who are Calvinistic in their theology and their views. And they said, yeah, they were really, really kind of hungry and desperate to find some other like-minded, believers in Amarillo, Texas. And so, we started meeting monthly, having a luncheon together once a month, started reading some books together, just interacting, getting to know one another, developing some friendships. And over the last 7 years or so, we've had some really good fellowship and some good relationships that have been built. And then also over that time, we started at least once a year, providing some kind of a reformed conference for folks from our various churches. And so I think we've had six of those now over the years. And those have been the most recent one with Carl Truman came this last October, did a weekend on Luther. And it was just really a tremendous weekend. The folks loved it. And we had about 400 folks come out the two nights that Carl spoke. And so it was it's the biggest thing that we've ever done collectively in town.
Yeah, that's amazing. Now, many people listen to Reform Forum. They really enjoy it because they're in a context in which they might not have a lot of people, Reformed people, to speak with. And I felt that when I was living in Illinois before coming to seminary, where I wanted to discuss Reformed theology and talk about things I was reading and bounce ideas off others, but I just didn't have much of an opportunity. And so when eventually came to Philadelphia and was having discussions and conversations all over the place, some friends of mine and I, we decided it would be interesting to try to capture some of these things and provide an opportunity for people to discuss and people to at least participate in some way, shape, or form with a Reformed conversation. Now, you had an associate pastor. You had Andrew Moody, is an enterprising young man. He likes to get into a number of different projects and activities. And so it's interesting to me that you had the fellowship, even within your church, of somebody to talk to. But you went out and created opportunities and found people that maybe traditionally, people in OP or the PCA or RPCNA, other NAPARC churches might not be going out to speak with. How have you found that in terms of going out to talk to people outside of NAPARC and finding fellowship among Calvinists, even outside of the traditional denominations we often fellowship with?
Well, I don't know exactly how Andrew went about, finding these guys originally. Of course, he's a high tech guy, and he may have found them at various blogs, et cetera. Mm. Their names are somehow he found out that they had interest in some interest in Calvinism. And when we met them, like I said, they were very hungry for fellowship, and we've developed close relationships over the years. And this original group of guys, there are about five or six. I left out one, by the way, that I should mention, a young man by the name of John Kohler, who is actually the director of a Bible chair at our local junior college. And John Kohler comes from an independent Christian church background, but he was a Wheaton graduate and had become reformed in his convictions. And even though he's teaching at a Bible chair that's supported by independent Christian churches, he's basically teaching Calvinistic Reformed theology in his classes. Mm-hmm. And over the years, as he's influenced young men towards the gospel ministry, he's wound up being very significant in pointing them towards Westminster. And in the process of pointing them towards Westminster, they run into our congregation along the way as well because of our connections with Westminster. So we've really appreciated this relationship with John, and he's been he's been very supportive of our congregation. He preaches for me often when I'm out of town, and so it's been a real encouraging thing to get to know him, and we are excited about his commitment to wanting to have men properly educated for the gospel ministry and sending them on to Westminster. But another interesting thing that's happened, this fellowship was just among the ministers. It wasn't an alliance of churches.
It's not a pseudo-denomination anything.
No,
it's
not an alliance.
It's a meeting of ministers.
Right, just a meeting of ministers and just trying to encourage and each other, sharpen one another. But what one thing that's happened is that with our congregation and two others, about 2 years ago, as pastors, we said, it'd be really good if our folks, we're all pastoring smaller congregations, all of them under 100 people. Mm-hmm. And we said, it'd be really nice if we could get our folks to know one another. And so we decided 2 years ago that we would try to have a monthly worship service together. these three churches. Hmm. And it's our congregation plus the two other congregations are two of the original guys mm-hmm. in our ARF fellowship. Mm-hmm. And so, the elders in all three churches have been very positive about what we've been doing in terms of our ministerial alliance. And the elders in all three churches thought it would be great if our congregations could get together and get to know one another and perhaps find other ways to be involved in other kinds of ministries down the road, mm-hmm. like college ministries at the college down in Canyon, Texas, which is 17 miles away, or other opportunities. So 2 years ago, we started a monthly evening worship service.
Wow.
And the way it works is each of our churches does have its own building, so we take turns, we rotate who hosts. But if you're the host church for the evening worship service, then one of the other men in ARF preaches.
Oh.
So it's like when we host it at our church building, I lead the service, I put the service together. A typical service in an OPC congregation, but the evangelical free pastor preaches, or the Faith Baptist preacher preaches, or John Kohler from the Bible Chair preaches, or the Reformed Episcopal guy when he was still in town would preach. And so that was so well received by all three congregations that all the elders, after we tried it for 6 months, they said, we got to keep doing this. And so we're in our third year now of having monthly worship services together. So it's really, for Amarillo, Texas, it's really the closest thing to a truly ecumenical type of experience for our folks, and they love it.
What I've noticed about the few instances I've had with ARF just visiting Amarillo is that it's not just a let bygones be bygones ministerial alliance. It seems that when they are getting together and actually talking about theology and scripture, they're talking about the issues that they disagree with. They're talking about covenant theology. They're talking about church polity. And they're talking about distinctives. And there seems to be not just a ecumenical for the sake of ecumenical ism, but it's actually, let's get together and talk about the authority of scripture should determine the way that we, you know, live in godliness and practice our religion. And so I found that to be really encouraging, so that when the few times I've been at ARF get-togethers, I've gotten into theological conversations with other pastors about distinctions. And so it naturally, it's not a real heated, I can't believe you have this position, but it's actually, let's talk, let's keep talking about the issues that we maybe not see eye to eye on, but and then encourage each other on the issues that we do see eye to eye on. And so I thought that was extremely encouraging. Have you found that to be the case normally?
Yeah, I think, Jonathan, initially our fellowship was really based on the fact that we all agreed that we were really committed to the same gospel. Our understanding of the gospel was the same. So it's kind of a miniature together for the gospel thing. Hmm. I mean, we weren't really even aware of the Together for the Gospel conferences and that whole thing yeah. when this started. But now looking at it, it's kind of like that's what kind of happened locally. We have this little group of men that are together for the gospel. And so that's the foundation point in terms of our unity. But then, you know, as the relationships have developed, we've continued to talk about, you know, Reformed theology, you know, broadly, not just specifically in terms of soteriology and Calvinism, but, you know, in terms of ecclesiology and how do we practice a Reformed view of the gospel in terms of our churches and, mm-hmm. and elders and oversight and shepherding and all those kind of things and encouraging one another. I won't mention any particular churches by name, but we've had a couple of independent churches that were having some issues with not knowing exactly how to handle discipline situations that came up in the church, didn't have really a good framework. I loaned them our OPC Book of Church Order, and now and two of the churches have adopted that as the way wow. that they now operate in terms of their ecclesiology and their oversight of their people, wow. because they weren't coming from traditions that had those kinds of resources. Mm-hmm. And they're like, gosh, this book is great because it gives us direction on how to handle issues that come up in the church as mm-hmm. far as pastors. And so that's been an encouraging thing just to see, see that here's an independent church that's using a confessional church's, book of church order mm-hmm. to help them in terms of pastoral care and oversight.
I've heard similar stories in other cases, and we also have a ministerium in the Presbytery of the Midwest in the Chicagoland area, where we get together with a number of different Calvinist Baptists and a bunch of us OPC guys. And it's just a great time of encouragement, fellowship. We pray for one another. But it's nice to be able to share and talk through some of these issues with people, especially as the example you've given to people that might not have an historic ecclesiology. I mean, Presbyterianism has been honed over mm-hmm. many, many years. We would say thousands and thousands of years. There's an interesting backstory. This doesn't all happen out of the blue. I'm interested to hear, and if you're willing to describe for us just you're coming along and you're becoming reformed and eventually becoming the pastor there at Christ Covenant in Amarillo. Can you provide some of that story and the history underneath all of what's been happening in recent years?
Yeah, I'll try to do the brief version because there are a lot of rabbit trails I could go down on this one. But I was my involvement in Christian ministry was to begin with, through Young Life, the Young Life mission. I became a Young Life area director back in 1970, and was in Waco, Texas for 4 years directing Young Life, which was a Christian outreach, evangelistic outreach organization to high school kids. And I was a college graduate, but not a seminary graduate. When you went to work for Young Life, if you weren't a seminary graduate, you had to get the equivalency of a seminary degree, which Young Life offered in the summertime through what was called the Young Life Institute, which was in Colorado Springs that met the entire summer. And the Young Life Institute was simply made up of seminary professors from around the country who would come in and teach their courses. And you had to, and so I, not being a seminary graduate, I had to go through that program. It was not an accredited degree. It was just, you had to finish the basic certificate that they offered. But the original dean of the school was Paul K. Jewett. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Dr. Jewett was a Westminster grad. And Dr. Jewett tended to try to stack the faculty in the summer with Reformed and Covenant theologians. And so it was really through the Young Life Institute that I got introduced to Reformed theology, formally. In fact, Dr. Gerstner from Pittsburgh taught there in the summers, taught history. R.C. Sproul was one of the instructors before Ligonier was even started. And so I had R.C. and Gerstner and other Reformed theologians back in the 70s. And so it was really during those summers that I really became a Calvinist and convinced of Reformed theology. It wasn't until later that I became more really covenantal in my views. But anyhow, I was a Young Life guy after Waco, moved to Amarillo, Texas, and was doing Young Life, working with high school kids there. One of the first two high school kids that I met when I moved to Amarillo was Scott Alfin. Now known as K. Scott Alfin. But I met Scott right after he graduated from high school, and he became involved in our volunteer college. We had volunteer kids in college that helped us with our Young Life ministry to high school kids. So Scott became a volunteer in Young Life and one of our leadership kids, and so did Steve Cairns. And so Steve and Scott became good friends. They worked with me in Young Life and a number of other college students that I was working with who were working with high school kids there in Amarillo. And anyhow, after both of them graduated from college, they both pursued coming on the Young Life staff. And so they were trainees under me in Amarillo for Young Life. And during those days, this was back in, I moved to Amarillo in 1974. So this was the mid 70s when all this was going on, with Oliphant and Cairns. And so we, we were very interested in apologetics. I had become really interested primarily in Francis Schaeffer, because Schaeffer was becoming very prominent among evangelicals, and interested primarily in apologetics because of our work with non-Christian high school kids, you know, and preaching the gospel and teaching the gospel and reaching out to the lost. And so Scott and Steve were both being trained under me in Amarillo. And I think it was the year that Dr. Van Til at Westminster retired from the seminary after 40 years or whatever his tenure was here. Christianity Today ran a front page article, and he was on the cover of Christianity Today, and the main article was about his teaching time at Westminster. Well, Scott Olphant read that article, and there were a number of things in that article that really, you know, caught his attention and spoke to him about the discussions that we were having about apologetics locally. Steve and Scott and I had to use Schaeffer's apologetics in terms of our evangelism. And so Scott was interested enough that he wrote Van Til and told him he'd read the article and asked him if he could ask him some further questions. And Van Til was very gracious. And so they began a correspondence while Scott was this young life trainee in Amarillo, Texas. And of course, at that time, I was pretty committed to kind of evidentialism and Josh McDowell and evidence that demands a verdict and all those kind of things. And Scott could probably tell the story better, but we kind of got into it one day when I suggested that he use something from Josh McDowell's book, you know, in terms of one of his young life messages. And Scott told me, he said, "Well, I don't think I really believe that anymore." And I'm like, "What? What do you mean? What do you mean you don't believe that?" And so, well, I've been reading this other guy, and I have some problems with some of that evidentialism and classical apologetics, some of the Schaeffer stuff. And I said, well, we've got to talk about this. So shortly after that, you know, we began a conversation, and he basically introduced me to Van Til. Now he'd been probably corresponding with Dr. Van Til for over 6 months at that point in time. Dr. Van Til sent him his books, and Scott was reading him and just asking questions back and forth. And so Scott introduced me to Van Til. I started reading Van Til, and we're like, yeah, this guy's really got the answers to a lot of the questions we've been asking. It's a whole different trajectory from the one that we had been on in terms of apologetics. And so we got real excited about it. And Scott asked me one day, he said, "Do you think there's any way that we could have Dr. Van Til come to Amarillo and talk to our volunteer leaders that were working with high school kids with us? In other words, could we afford to do that?" We had enough money at the time, so we said, "Yeah, let's invite him." So we invited Van Til to come to Amarillo to talk to volunteer college age, young life leaders working with high school kids, and he very graciously accepted. And I think it was his last public trip that he made. He was in his mid 80s. So he came to Amarillo in 1980, and met with us for, like an extended weekend, and met with our volunteer leaders. And of course we were clueless about pretty much everything in terms of Reformed or Covenant theology. We really didn't know anything about Westminster Seminary. We didn't know about the OPC. We didn't know about Reformed, denominations. We didn't know about, Covenant theology to speak of. We were just clueless on all of that. And so it was a great weekend, but what dovetailed with that weekend, which was interesting, was that I had been a member of a PCUSA church and was getting very frustrated about the theology that I was being taught there. And just had so happened to, I saw a little ad in the paper about, and this was about 2 weeks before Van Til came to Amarillo. I saw an ad in the paper, Orthodox Presbyterian Church meets at such and such. No information, that's all it said. Just a little box ad. And I'm like, what is this Orthodox Presbyterian Church? So I went to a worship service at this Orthodox Presbyterian Church, about 15 people, meeting in a Seventh-day Adventist annex building. And but the pastor of this little church plant was a graduate of Westminster, John Hilblink, who graduated in the 70s. And John had just moved to Amarillo about 6 months earlier to plant an OPC church in Amarillo. So I went to the service, and after the service, I introduced myself and I said, who are you and where'd you go to seminary? He said, I went to Westminster. And I said, that's interesting because, I worked for Young Life. I don't know if you know about Young Life, but it's a ministry to high school kids here in town. But we've just asked a retired professor from Westminster to come to Amarillo to meet with our volunteer leaders by the name of Van Til. Do you know Van Til? And John about fell over. He's like, you're kidding. Dr. Van Til's coming to Amarillo. I said, yes, yeah, coming to meet with his Young Life people. And so he said, can I come? Can I bring my elders? There was two elders in the church plant. And we said, sure, come on. So John brought the OPC elders along to all of these meetings, with Van Til. And in fact, since we didn't know about the OPC or really any reformed denominations to speak of, we'd already lined up for Van Til to preach at the local Bible church, because we had a good relationship with the Bible church. And he was billed at the Bible church as, come here, Francis Schaeffer's teacher. And that's how he was billed at the local Bible church. But, I probably never forget that sermon. I mean, Van Til got in the pulpit and he basically says, the sermon is like, well, you see, in the beginning,
yeah.
He starts in Genesis and literally he goes through the entire Bible. I mean, the sermon was like, it was kind of like a one sermon survey of all of Scripture, like an hour and a half sermon starting in Genesis and ending in Revelation.
Oh, wow.
But Dr. Van Til was very gracious and so all of a sudden there was that connection. Oh, Van Til is an OPC pastor, and here's this OPC church plant, and here's a Westminster grad, and the apologetics. And so all of a sudden we're just kind of introduced to all the dots, are kind of connecting. And so from Van Til's weekend on, I started attending the OPC, and then probably within 3 or 4 months joined. So did Steve Karen, so did Scott Oliphant. We all joined the church. We went through the Inquirers class together. John Hillblink took us through that. And of course, we continued to have all kinds of questions, kind of coming from a broad evangelical background for John Hillblink, who was great, very gracious, really helped us through all those issues. So we all joined the church. And we're just really very happy about that. And then about a year later, I began pursuing becoming a ruling elder in the congregation. And also within a year or so, Steve and Scott, as I mentioned earlier, they were college graduates coming on the Young Life staff. So like me previously, they had to have some kind of theological training. Well, by that time, the Young Life Institute was hooked up with Fuller Theological Seminary. And both of them decided that they couldn't in good conscience go to Fuller because of the battle for the Bible issues going on in those days. And so if you had to go to Fuller, you still had to pay for some of it yourself. So as Young Life staff, they're so like, well, if we're going to have to pay for some of it, we don't want to go somewhere where we've got some issues with the seminary, some of their core beliefs. And of course, by this time, we've become very connected through Van Til to Westminster. So Scott and Steve decided we're just going to leave Young Life and pack up and move to Philly. And that's exactly what they did. They packed up and moved to Philly, and they left me in Amarillo with my, because I had a wife and three children at the time. It was a little bit tougher on me. Neither of them had, I don't believe Jared was born then. Neither of them had children at the time.
Maybe Jared.
Okay.
He has a picture of him with.
Oh, that's right. That's so right. He was an infant. But
Jared and Jenny were.
So they packed up and came to Philly and just had a great, great time here. The really exciting thing for me was that I tell people I'm not a seminary graduate, but I went to Westminster vicariously because Scott and Steve sent me everything that they were learning, all the books, all the class notes, all the lectures. And so I was basically kind of getting a free Westminster education through them and got very committed to the seminary over those years. And then after they graduated, they both came back to Amarillo. That was kind of the amazing thing. They both came back. Scott came back and started a little local ministry under the oversight of our elders in our congregation called Pursuit Ministries. It was kind of a localized version of Sproul's Ligonier ministry, but it was just on a local level, just a teaching ministry. And Scott would teach kind of anybody, anywhere, anytime, you know, couples, weekends, church history courses, systematic theology courses, Greek if people wanted the language, or Hebrew. I mean, he would teach whatever anybody wanted, but it was all under the oversight of our session. And that whole first year, that he, the reason he even did it was because Steve Cairns' dad, Bob Cairns, who was a very active member in our congregation, he was the one that asked Scott to do it and agreed to fund it entirely for the first year. So Bob basically funded Pursuit Ministries for the first year. And by the end of the first year, Scott had done enough teaching and was becoming known in the community that he began getting other donors to the work. And so it continued for the next 5 years as a teaching ministry there. And Steve came back on the Young Life staff with me. And both of them were ordained in our presbytery. So we had a ruling elder and a teaching elder in the OPC who were the Young Life staff in Amarillo. And I venture to say that that's probably the only time that's ever happened in the history of Young Life. I don't think that would be a normal course of events.
Let me ask you this real quick. In all of this with Steve, yourself and Scott, at what time does Dr. Tipton fall into Young Life? Like, when was Dr. Tipton Lane just going to Young Life?
Well, I don't want to mess up the details of this, and I'd rather Lane tell the whole story. And I could get some of this wrong because it was so many years ago now. But Lane, I knew Lane when, like I say, I was doing Young Life at the high school where he went, Tascosa High School in Amarillo, Texas. And Lane, I knew a lot of the athletes. Lane was a very impressive football athlete at the high school. And a lot of his friends were active in Young Life and came to my Young Life club and went on camps and all kinds of things.
John Cleveland
was one of his best friends, who was real active, in my Bible study group with my high school guys that I had. And Lane was never interested. He might occasionally come to Young Life, but he was not interested in anything Christian or anything having to do with the faith, even though some of his buddies were. He was not a believer. He was just a red-blooded American football player, and a good one, by the way, very good athlete. And he was just all about football and probably a good time. And that's, I don't want to say too many things about that, but a little bit of a wild hair there, as Oliphant was too, by the way, when I met him, These guys did not come from pristine Christian home backgrounds, to say the least. And so anyhow, Lane was, but he was good friends with a couple of the kids that were involved. And so, so he knew me and I knew him because I'd see him all the time. And I went to all of his football games and I got to know him, had a relationship with him, but it was after he graduated and got a football scholarship and was playing football out in Southeast Oklahoma or Southwest Oklahoma. He went to New Mexico, but then he transferred to Oklahoma, but he was still, pursuing football scholarships. But somewhere about the end of his freshman year, the beginning of his sophomore year in college, he was converted. And he started calling me after he was converted, just with all kinds of, just kind of elementary questions about the faith and the, kind of basic discipleship questions. I think I'll have to ask Lane about this, but I think that first summer after he was converted, I got some of the high school kids together who were, you know, his age, who had graduated and were in their first or second year of college. And I did a summer Bible study with them. And I think what we did that first summer was Sproul's Holiness of God series. And so I think Lane was in that as well. I can't for sure say that, but I know that was right about the same time. But anyhow, Lane started calling me, and we really, after his conversion, we really developed a great relationship. He would call me four or five times a week with all kinds of questions and theological questions. And so, you know, I went over to the college where he was over in Oklahoma, met with him a couple of different times and spent the weekend with him, just trying to do some basic discipleship and giving him things to read. And I was giving him, like, you know, J.I. Packer and various other things to read about, you know, in the faith. And finally, you know, he was so hungry and was so interested in so many different things theologically, really started asking questions, you know, beyond where I was. And so I said, look, Lane, I've got a life. I've got a wife and four kids. I have to do other things than talk to you every night for 2 hours at a time. So I'm going to send you a book. So I went and got him, Burkhoff's, you know, systematic. And I said, I'm going to send you this book. It's a reference book. Whenever you have a question, you go there first, read that, and then call me. You know, and you know, if you got questions, but you know, this will be good, you know, beginning stuff for a lot of your questions. So I sent it to Lane, and about a week later, he calls. He goes, "Man, that was a great book." You know, like Lane devours the whole thing like in a week. I'm like, I'm out of, I don't know what to send you now. You know, I'm like, I don't, you know. So anyhow, the long and the short of it is he continued to grow, and I tried to send him everything I could. And that's really how our relationship began. But it was connected to Young Life indirectly through his friends. And once he was converted, he just kind of sought me out. So
that's a great story. It's great to hear. And I was just talking to him about Burkhoff yesterday, and I guess it'll be the Christ the Center prior to this one. So our listeners that have listened to both will be interested to hear both things. That's so encouraging just to hear about the work that the Lord's been doing in Amarillo and in your life. And I'm wondering, as we might try to wrap things up, how we can think about these sorts of things in other contexts. I'm sure there are many ministers listening that would be interested in fellowshipping with other people in the community, that would be interested in getting young men especially excited, maybe as future elders or future ministers, or who knows. How do we go about fostering a community or a culture of people that are interested in taking the next step, I suppose, in getting more interested about theology? I guess it's a question about discipleship. You have any thoughts on that or encouragement for other ministers or elders that are out there around the world?
I haven't really thought through that, although, you know, it's been really exciting just to see. I mean, the three original guys that are still in our fellowship group, whenever we get together, even now monthly, we just kind of look at each other and we go, can you believe what's happened here in terms of just the fellowship and what the Lord has done? It's really wasn't because we had any great notion. It was really just because of Andrew's vision to have like-minded pastors, you know, encouraging one another. And so, the Lord has just kind of opened a lot of doors and a lot of opportunities, for all of our staff, all of our church leadership, many of our elders in all of our churches, you know, have benefited greatly, you know, from our ministerial alliance as well. I don't know if I mentioned that because last year Dr. Tipton came to Amarillo just for a weekend with our elders, pastors and elders. And so we had 25 or 30 guys with Dr. Tipton for the weekend. And he basically led us through all of his Union with Christ material. And it was just absolutely fantastic. And all of the elders were just so encouraged and saw how it directly related to their ministries with their own people, and so excited they want to continue doing that, you know, on a yearly basis, and kind of continuing ongoing education for them as elders in the church and church leaders. And so that's been really encouraging. But there was really no rhyme or reason other than, hey, we need to be together with like-minded believers, encourage one another. And that's what we've done. And in the process, we've gotten to know each other real well. We've actually consulted one another when we've had difficult problems. It's almost, from my tradition, it's almost like having a mini presbytery locally, because when I've run across problems or difficulties that our elders can't settle, I've been able to go to some of these brothers, and they've been through similar situations and given counsel or advice. Yeah, that's really been tremendous help. And likewise, you know, we've actually had some of these other ministers attend our session meetings to help us decide what to do in this discipline situation with this person, because there's maybe a mutual contact. You know, in other words, a member of our church and a member of one of the other churches know each other, and they're involved in some kind of situation. So we've kind of banded together, and we didn't sign a formal document, but we have, as leaders, said, look, we want our fellowship to be so close that when there are issues in terms of individual members in our congregations, that they can't simply flee our congregation to one of the other Reformed churches in town, you know, if that's inappropriate.
Yeah.
So we've agreed no church hopping among our people when there's problems. Mm-hmm. In other words, but we try to help each other, you know, hold our flock accountable in terms of Matthew 18 types of situations. And that has really actually worked. You know, we've actually had people restored, you know, through discipline situations, because other ministers have been involved with it, and they couldn't simply, you know, leave our congregation and run away from an issue, mm-hmm. instead of, you know, getting it corrected biblically. So that's been a real encouragement. So, but as far as, you know, I would just encourage other pastors, wherever they are, you know, just to maybe using the internet. I don't know exactly how Andrew did it, but just look around for those who do have the same convictions. And like I say, we started basically with, you know, the gospel. And from our standpoint, of course, that meant commitment to Calvinism and to the 5 points. And now in this day, you can find a lot of folks that are now familiar with, you know, the 5 solas and those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of independent churches out there with independent pastors that have those same convictions, but they're not connected to confessional churches or to the kind of fellowship that you would have in a presbytery, et cetera. But so it's become, for these guys coming out of the independent church movement, I think it's been a real encouragement for them,
yeah.
You know, and it's been fun for us to be involved with that and to be, you know, ministering alongside of them. So
that's great. Well, again, people, David's a pastor at Christ Covenant OPC in Amarillo, Texas. How can people get a hold of you if they're in town or if they're visiting? Do you have a website?
Yes,
phone
we do
number?
Have a website.
Where are you located?
Thanks to Andrew, we have an excellent website. We're located on the west side of Amarillo, but our web address is ccopc.org, and all the information about our local church and services and is all on there. And also a lot of connections to other, you know, Reformed organizations, et cetera. So, and we do continue in our ARF group to try to have these yearly conferences. The next one will be next September, and Dr. Greg Beal from Westminster will be coming to Amarillo to do something on a topic that's hardly ever talked about in Texas, eschatology. So it'll be interesting to have someone from his background and his view of end times and eschatology, because, you know, the eschatology conferences in our neck of the woods are about a dime a dozen. Mm. But it'll be great to have someone from the reform perspective bringing. And I'm sure we won't have any problem with attendance, you know, at the eschatology conference.
Nevertheless,
or the Book of Revelation.
People can visit the website for more information about that and be able to register and attend. That's going to be exciting.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, guys. I also want to point people to WTS.edu. And thanks to Westminster for the space to record and for all of their work and provisions in our lives in various ways. And, of course, we're available online at reformedforum.org. There you'll find information about all of our programs as well as ways to support us. Please visit our donate page and help us to continue to produce and distribute all of our programs free of charge. We want to thank everybody for listening, and we hope you join us again next time on Christ the Center.